Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Why Are Okra Special? Once again, for many reasons, but also, I just want to say, if you haven't seen High on the Hog on Netflix or read the book High on the Hog, please do so. They do an amazing job of going over okra and, you know, how it arrived in the Americas and, you know, the kind of bad history of it, but also the rich cultural heritage that it really does provide, and where it still is today. So it's really, really great. Also, there is a publication called Whetstone Magazine. The host of High on the Hog on Netflix, he has, you know, that magazine, and they do podcasts as well. So check that out. You know, make sure that you're doing that. He had an episode where he was talking to somebody from Iceland about their foods and what was going on there. It was amazing just to hear the actual, like, you know, day-to-day goings on of someone in Iceland, and you're not just hearing about fermented shark and fermented this and that. You know, it was just talking about what they do and how they store seeds, store, you know, anything in the winter. So it's really great. But also, make sure you're signed up for our newsletter. Go to culinaryconvo.com, get signed up for that, because you're going to get a ton of okra recipes this week. Some crazy good things coming out of that. But also, you get to see some videos, behind-the-scenes research. Believe me, I found a ton of stuff. It's just a matter of how much of it I am trying to show. So, yeah, let's get started. Why are okra special, everybody? So, first thing here, out of Pomona Education, so pomona.edu, their farm blog, they talk about basically, and this is Pomona off to my left here, it says Pomona did a study on okra, how it got United States, how it grew it, and how we eat it. And it focused on okra, and it's striving to understand the crops grown at the farms in an anti-colonial context. So I thought that was going to be a pretty good and rich start. So the okra, you know, it's part of the mallow family, which is also cacao or cocoa, and then cotton, also part of the mallow family, which is also the Malvaceae family. But yeah, okra is a plant with edible seed pods in the hibiscus mallow family, alongside the sorrel, cotton, hibiscus, cacao plants, and others. It is disputed where the plant originated, most likely somewhere in West Africa. Pictured here, it's Egyptian. Egyptian okra. It's a little bit shorter, but we do know that it was cultivated by ancient Egyptians. Ancient Egypt was called Kemet, which means black land, and is believed to have referred to the generative soil in the region. Okra was brought to the United States via the transatlantic slave route at some point between the 16th and 19th centuries. A good author, Leah Penniman, who showed in her book, notes that in some cases, African women braided seeds into their hair before being forced aboard transatlantic slave ships, believing against the odds in a future of sovereignty on land. And so, you know, you see, you know, braided hair, different things. Looking through here, you can see on my left, but for those listening on the pod, basically there were all sorts of designs in braiding and in hair that allowed them to store certain things or certain seeds to carry with them, because they knew people wouldn't be checking their hair that often and trying to figure out. They would hide rice sometimes within one of the braids, and it allowed it to where those seeds were brought to the Americas. And like she was saying, it was mainly for sovereignty on land, not to help profiteer people who were buying and trading slaves. And it says, though the disgusting process that was transatlantic slavery, okra made its way from West Africa to the United States and became a staple, specifically in Southern cooking, as enslavement existed for a longer period of time in the South, and the warmer weather makes growing the plant more feasible. Okra is important in other diasporic cuisines as well. It is important to consider, confront, and honor the people and processes that made the plants and foods that we love so much today accessible to us. And I find that to be very true. On High on the Hog, that Netflix food documentary going over the book High on the Hog, they talk about, you know, rice and how it was cultivated. America would have not really had any rice species of any kind without African American, you know, and that transatlantic slave trade. Because where it's grown now heavily in like South Carolina, the land was not really made for it. And so it took a lot of their specialty and knowing and understanding how to farm and cultivate it, to really have it grow. And now like Carolina, as much as, you know, like I said, it is sad to know that that's kind of the back history of it, but Carolina gold rice is very important to that region. It doesn't exist without them bringing it over. And the next one here, cultivating and caring for okra. Basically looking at the plant here, one, amazing flower on it. The fruit, really, really great, but very green. So growing it, yeah, fields of green, man. You're going to have it. But it does say here, cultivating and caring for okra can be tricky. Depending on where you live, as it is a heat-loving plant, it is possible to grow in it in colder northern soils with the help of some sort of row cover or black plastic covering to heat up the soil. Starting okra indoors for 5 to 6 weeks helps ensure that the soil is warm enough when transplanting, and it should not be planted until a few weeks after the last frost date. Once the plant reaches about 6 inches, it can be mulched. The seed pod itself can be harvested when it reaches the length of an index finger. Okra is a nitrogen-fixing crop, so it helps fertilize and nourish the soil for other plants to come. So, an amazing plant. Let's just be honest. Anything that is actually producing nitrogen, which I live in Oregon, the weird, almost like paper mill smell that sometimes goes throughout the valley, the Willamette Valley, it is a nitrogen-rich fertilizer. And they have to basically include it into their fertilizer or anything that's enhancing it, because getting nitrogen into your soil is not an easy thing to do. So it's amazing that okra, it's going to do it for you, which is amazing. And from grandbabycakes.com, she goes over fried okra, but more specifically, because I know everybody, when they probably clicked on this episode, they were like, I love okra, but everybody I know who doesn't like okra, or me myself, I don't like it because it's slimy. It's slimy. I don't like the texture, which, as everybody knows from this podcast, grow up. Just grow up. Enjoy the textures. There are different textures out there. But anyways, it does say here how to cook okra so it isn't slimy. She says, but okra doesn't have to be slimy, y'all. There are a few precautions you can take to assure you are cooking your southern okra the best way possible. One major precaution being reduce the cutting. The more you cut this intricate veggie, the more slime it produces. So cutting it into larger pieces instead of dicing it finely or doing anything like that will reduce the slime quite a bit. Try to opt in for whole slices of okra rather than finely chopped pieces the next time you get ready to prepare some. There are even different selection types of okra, plenty of sizes to choose from at the grocery store, so be mindful of what you pick up. When picking fresh okra at the grocery store, always choose smaller pods. They should be mostly green. If you see black specks anywhere, avoid it because they aren't as fresh. And then her tip here, try to avoid the larger okra pods because they can be tougher when cooked, more fibrous. Anything around 4 inches is too long. And so make it to where it's 4 inches or under. Make sure that it's very green, no black specks, anything kind of different than your green plant. And you should have a great piece of okra. And then don't cut it too much. Put the knife away, everybody. Jeez. But from Wikipedia here, okra or okro, a belm, which the... Sorry, I said a belm, and then I changed a picture over here. What was I doing? Anyways, the scientific name is a belm oscus esculentus, known in many English-speaking countries as lady fingers or okro, which is C-H-R-O, or otro. A belmuscus is New Latin from Arabic, a bulmusc meaning father of musk, while esculentus is Latin for being fit for human consumption. So that's how you knew food was going to be good for you. The first use of the word okra, alternatively okro, appeared in 1679 in the colony of Virginia, deriving from the Igbo word okuru. The word gumbo was first used in American vernacular around 1805, deriving from Louisiana Creole, but originates from either the Mbundu word okingombo, or the Kimbundu word Kinongbo. Despite the fact that in most of the United States, the word gumbo often refers to the dish, so not, you know, the actual okra. Gumbo in many places in the Deep South may have used it to refer to the pods and the plant, as well as many other variants of the word found across the African diaspora in the Americas. And then from Texas A&M University, for their Aggie horticulture, they have archives talking about their publications, and one of them was Vegetable Travelers, and they talk about okra. From Arabia, okra was spread over North Africa, completely around the Mediterranean and eastward. The absence of any ancient Indian names for it suggests that it reached India after the beginning of the Christian era. Wild okra was on the Upper Nile, which you can see pictured here. Although the plant has been well known in India for a long time, it is not found wild there. Modern travelers have found okra growing truly wild, however, along the White Nile and elsewhere in the Upper Nile country, as well as in Ethiopia. So, and as we know from previous episodes here, Ethiopia, kind of the cradle of civilization there. Via Wikipedia, also on their okra page here, one of the earliest European accounts is by a Spanish Moor who visited Egypt in 1216 and described the plant under cultivation by the locals who ate the tender young pods with meal. So like cornmeal, probably fufu, cassava. So from Arabia, the plant spread around the shores of the Mediterranean Sea and eastward. The plant was introduced to the Americas by ships plying the Atlantic slave trade. By 1658, when its presence was recorded in Brazil, it was further documented in Suriname in 1686. Okra may have been introduced to southeastern North America from Africa in the early 18th century. By 1748, it was being grown as far north as Philadelphia. Thomas Jefferson noted it was well established in Virginia by 1781. It was commonplace throughout the southern United States by 1800, and the first mention of different cultivars was in 1806. So definitely, it's if you think about that many years in between, and all this, 200 years, and it's well cultivated. Obviously a heat loving plant in the South. I bet it grew really, really well. you have gumbos being made, you have different dishes with okra being made, and food, especially back then, veggies were super important. You could get meat, probably, you know, not easy, but easier than actually farming because of the little knowledge we had. A lot of the knowledge was with Native Americans or with African Americans in the form of slaves. And it's one of those things where that knowledge spread. And obviously, we got a new vegetable in the Americas. From Daily Progress, okra has an interesting food history article. Gumbo was adapted by the Indians, who made it with a type of meat, including owl meat. To thicken the stew, the Indians used file powder made from dried sassafras leaves. And the Moors called okra pods sun vessels. They believed that the ripened seeds contained therapeutic properties, which once consumed would remain in a man's body forever. This notion was shared by many Arabs and Africans and caused okra to be highly prized. The Arabs deemed okra a rare delicacy and prepared it only for special occasions, such as weddings. This dish, pictured off to my left, food writers say that the okra is seldom cooked as a separate vegetable, except in India. In Texas, okra is combined with tomatoes, and in South Carolina, it is combined with rice in a dish called Limping Susan, which is Hoppin' John's, like, aunt or cousin, something like that. That's what they say. But yeah, Limping Susan. Okra, big time in it here. And back to Wikipedia, the species of okra, it is a perennial, often cultivated as an annual in temperate climates, often growing to around 6'7" tall or 2 meters. So it's a tall plant. As a member of the Malvaceae, I think that's the right thing. If you're a scientist out there and you know how to pronounce that, send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com. I truly do would love to know how you pronounce that. It is related to such species as cotton, cacao, or cocoa, and hibiscus. The leaves are 10 to 20 centimeters or 48 inches in long, broad, palmately lobed with 5 to 7 lobes. The flower of the okra. Look at that thing. That is a beautiful flower. I tell you what, why aren't, grow more okra. Grow it more. We got heat going like crazy. We need more okra. My gosh. The flowers are 4 to 8 centimeters, which is 1 5/8 or 3 1/8 inches in diameter, with 5 white to yellow petals, often with red or purple spot at the base of each petal. The pollens are spherical and approximately 188 microns in diameter. Microns. Wow. The fruit is a capsule. It is up to 7 inches long, with pentagonal cross section containing numerous seeds. It is among the most heat and drought tolerant vegetable species in the world, and will tolerate soils with heavy clay and intermittent moisture, but frost can damage the pods. In cultivation, the seeds are soaked overnight prior to planting to a depth of 2 centimeters or about 3/8 or 13/16 inches. It prefers a soil temperature of at least 68 degrees Fahrenheit or 20 degrees centigrade for germination, which occurs between 6 days soaked seeds and 3 weeks. As a tropical plant, it also requires a lot of sunlight, and it should also be cultivated in soil that has a pH balance between 5.8 and 7, ideally on the acidic side. The most common disease afflicting the okra plant is verticillium wilt, often causing a yellowing and wilting of the leaves. Other diseases include powdery mildew in dry tropical regions, leaf spots, yellow mosaic, and root knot nematodes. But resistance to yellow mosaic virus A in Aesculentus was transferred through a cross with Abelmoscus menahot and resulted in this new variety called Parbonicranti. Parbonicranti, and it is very pentagonal, as they say. In the United States, much of the supply is grown in Florida, especially around Dade in southern Florida. Okra is grown throughout the state to some degree, so okra is available 10 months of the year. Yields range from less than 18,000 pounds per acre to over 30,000 pounds per acre, which, God, that is a ton. And then wholesale prices, they can go as high as $18 a bushel, which is about 60 cents per pound, or $1.30 per kilogram. The regional IPM centers provide integrated pest management plans for use in the state. The pods of the plant are mucilaginous, I believe is the word, resulting in the characteristic goo or slime when the seed pods are cooked. The mucilage contains soluble fiber. One possible way to de-slime okra, as we've talked about before, but another one here is to cook it with an acidic food, such as tomatoes, to minimize the mucilage. Pods are cooked, pickled, eaten raw, or included in salads. Okra may be used in developing countries to mitigate malnutrition and alleviate food insecurity. So already here, this plant, it's like one of the miracles of earth, man. Like, this is crazy. It can do all of these things, and it grows in high heat. It's drought resistant. We're off to an amazing start here. I think we're at the halfway point. Yeah. So it's getting kind of crazy. So raw okra, it is 90% water, 2% protein, and 7% carbohydrates, and contains negligible fat. In a 100-gram reference amount, raw okra is rich in 20% or more of the daily value. I almost got a fly, if anybody saw that. It's like a little gnat thing. I almost had it. Anyway, daily value of dietary fiber. So 20% or more of dietary fiber, vitamin C, and vitamin K, with moderate contents of thiamine, folate, and magnesium, which magnesium, we don't get it in super high amounts around here. So yeah, really good. Looking at okra, raw okra, usually per 100 grams, you're looking at 33 calories. The sugars, it's about 1.48 grams. Dietary fiber is 3.3. So it's good to have the dietary fiber higher than the sugars. Fat, it says 0.19 of a gram. Protein, though, almost 2 grams, 1.9. The vitamins here, this is where it gets pretty great. The vitamins, vitamin A equivalency is 5% of your daily value. Thiamine, which is B1, 17%. Riboflavin, which is B2, has 5%. Niacin, so B3, is 7%. And then folate, B9, is 15%. And that's per 100 grams. So that ain't bad. Vitamin C, it's 28%. 28%, which is 23 milligrams. Vitamin E, it's 2%, and vitamin K, 30%. The minerals here, same thing, daily value percentages: calcium, 8%, iron, 5%, magnesium, 16%. Once again, that is not an easy one to really get out of a lot of foods. Phosphorus, 9%, potassium, 6%, another good one. Potassium is supposed to help with, like, not cramping as much, what have you. So they tell you to eat like bagels and bagels and bananas, I think. Anyways, zinc, 6%. So both of those there. Other constituents in here is water, and that's 89.6 grams. So quite a bit. But yeah, the leaves and the seeds of okra. Young okra leaves may be cooked similarly to the greens of beets and dandelions, are used in salads. So mustard greens, right? You know, that kind of thing. But yeah, okra seeds may be roasted and ground to form a caffeine-free substitute for coffee, when importation of coffee was disrupted by the American Civil War in 1861, the Austin State Gazette said an acre of okra will produce seed enough to furnish a plantation with coffee in every way equal to that imported from Rio. Whoa. So just imagine, Civil War lasts longer, we don't have trade, something or other. Yeah, we're not looking at a different Starbucks, maybe. We're just having okra pods, right? And just drinking that, and it's a caffeine-free substitute. So it wouldn't give us much energy. That's probably why it's not popular now. We love our caffeine here. But anyway, the other thing that okra has is a greenish-yellow edible okra oil. It is pressed from okra seeds. It has a pleasant taste and odor and is high in unsaturated fats such as oleic acid and linoleic acid. The oil content of some varieties of the seed is about 40% at 794 kilograms per hectare, which is 708 pounds an acre. The yield was exceeded only by that of sunflower oil in one trial. There was a 1920 study that found that a sample contained 15% oil. So pretty crazy. And then the industrial uses for okra. This is where I was like, I was going through here and I'm just like, dude, is okra like our bamboo? Like, what is going on here? Bast fiber. It is from the stem of the plant, and it has industrial uses such as the reinforcement of polymer composites. The mucilage produced by the okra plant can be used for the removal of turbidity from wastewater by virtue of its flocculent properties. Wow. So, yeah, we can use the slime, right? So the mucilage from okra to remove turbidity from wastewater. That is crazy. But yeah, having compositions similar to a thick polysaccharide film, okra mucilage is also used under development as a biodegradable food packaging as of 2018. And a 2009 study found that okra oil suitable for use as a biofuel. So we could have okra as a biofuel here. But crazy to grow it in the regions that we grow it. That's just, man, that's a lot of things out of one plant. That's why you fund scientific studies, is because of stuff like this. Now, from foodreference.com, we talk about the purchasing, handling, and storage of okra. So purchase young, tender, but firm pods. They should snap easily in half. The best varieties are rich green color. Oh, man, I got like a breath there. Avoid pods that are dull and dry looking, blemished or limp. Store in a paper bag in the warmest part of the refrigerator, as temperatures below 45 degrees can damage okra. It does not store well, so use within 2 or 3 days at most. Or you can dry it, or you can pickle it. You can do a lot of different things with okra. Do not wash until it is ready to use, or it will become slimy. When preparing, remember that the more it is cut, the slimier it will become, and aluminum pots will discolor it, which that is interesting. Aluminum pots discolor it. Uses. Mature okra is used to make rope and paper. Avoid those old woody pods. And a cool thing here, so this is okra plants in comparison to a person, because obviously, like we were talking about earlier, they can grow up to 6 feet 7 inches. Wow, that's just crazy, man. I grew up eating okra quite a bit, especially fried okra. Love it in stews or gumbo. Oh man, And I like dried okra. There is a particular brand, it's from Kalby, I believe, that they have a dried okra snack. And I love that stuff. Anytime I see it, I pretty much try to buy a bag because it's really, really good. And then interesting recipes. I had a couple here. I have an Egyptian okra soup, which it's weka. W-E-E-K-A. It is vegan, and it is really green. It's an okra soup. It almost looks like a butternut squash soup, except okra-ized, right? So it's super-duper green. Then the other one here is Lebanese okra stew. So obviously, like we were saying, traveled around the Mediterranean, really got out there. So you got now a Lebanese okra stew, and the stew, it's basically half the bowl here along with basmati rice. So looks pretty good. It's hearty. There's 13 reviews for it. They do add sirloin steak. So pretty good. Sirloin steak, and then you have baby okra, so probably Egyptian okra. Garlic, cloves, onion, tomatoes, pomegranate, molasses. What? Anyways, all the good stuff. And those are only two recipes out of like 30 some odd recipes that I found through Pinterest, which, like I said, you can find that in the newsletter if you sign up on culinaryconvo.com. And like I said, also, if you go to Pinterest, look for Culinary Convo. You can see some of our videos on there as well as these recipes. I have them saved beyond belief for all of our episodes. And I just appreciate you guys listening. I mean, that is why okra is special. Basically, it's a crazy good plant, and it's like the history of it and how it came to the Americas and now how it's grown throughout the world. To me, it's part of food that it's a really kind of a beautiful thing, especially once you realize that it can fix malnutrition and any type of food shortages. But it's also kind of sad. It's like a bittersweet thing, because at least for the Americas, we received it because of the Atlantic slave trade, but it is tied to West African culture. And so it, like other foods or other things, and just like people, it is, it's complicated, but overall, we love okra, and that is why okra is special. Like I said, I appreciate you guys listening. I hope that these types of episodes really make you understand that we're doing deep digs into these into these foods and all these other things. Also plate and time, mapping the culinary world, and our United Foods of America. Yeah, buddy. So I appreciate you guys listening. Again, A18J39s. I appreciate it. Always leave a review. Try to, you know, star it, whatever, rate us, leave a comment, do whatever. It actually does help. It puts us higher, and so that people who want it recommended, they get it recommended. I love making this show. I hope that you guys love listening to it, and I just appreciate it. And we will see everybody next time on Why Are Special. Not really. Why Are, and then whatever our next special culinary thing will be. See you next time, everybody. Goodbye. See you next time.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.